San Francisco, the city by the bay, city of fog, the Paris of the West, the gay bay, but never, ever San Fran. Oh no, 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 no. And if you dare to utter the despised word Frisco, you're in trouble. But whatever you call it, it's a city of drama, a city of legends, and most importantly, a city absolutely crawling with legendary characters. And today, on this very special crossover episode, we're going to talk about one of San Francisco's most iconic legends and America's only emperor.
History is messy,
weird, wild, anything but boring.
We're rainy day rabbit holes,
exploring the unhinged side of history, politics, and culture.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole. Dun, dun, dun.
Thank you. Welcome back, friends and spooky bitches, because today we are joined by the gorgeous Gabby Gals from P&W Haunts and Homicides. Caitlin, say hi, Caitlin.
Hello.
And Cassie, say hi, Cassie.
Oh, hello, creepy people.
You might remember our beautiful pod wives from last year when we joined them in their city of Portland to explore the Shanghai tunnels and learn all about the historic Crystal Hotel. Oh, plus hot tub time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Hot tub.
Oh, yeah.
That stays between
the
all of us.
Salt water.
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say, did we share that?
Yeah.
P&W Haunts and Homicides is where ghosts, murder, and Pacific Northwest weirdness all hang out together. Basically, if it's spooky, weird, or slightly cursed, they're covering it. So what are you waiting for?
Wow.
Go subscribe to P&W Haunts and Homicides now. Okay, I'll wait.
Oh, wow. She's bossy.
Shay, you're hired.
I do what she says, you guys. I wouldn't mess around.
Yeah, honestly.
Now, before we get started, I think we should come up with a mashup of our two podcast names. What do you think?
I'm down.
That's a good idea.
I like it.
Okay, so I've got a top three, so you have to tell me what you think. Okay, so the first one, Rainy Day Haunts and Holes.
Ooh,
does that sound a little too sexual?
I mean, that might be perfect.
I mean,
it could or it couldn't.
Isn't it's that kind of our brand?
Entendre. Yeah, double entendre. I like it.
Yeah.
Okay, how about this? P&W Rabbit Homicides.
Rampant humping.
Oh, no.
Rabbit humping.
Rabbit humping homicides.
Well, I mean, we have,
that's a mashup,
by mistake, been referred to as Humps and Homicides. So I feel, you know, it's in the spirit of our show.
Yeah.
Really.
So yeah. For me, it's like rabbits snapped. And I'm just imagining, are you guys familiar with Monty Python and the Holy Grail? There's like,
yes, just the rabbit watched it like a week ago.
People in there, and it's got like fangs and it's got blood down its fur. I'm just thinking of that. Okay, so how about this one? Rainy Day Homicide Holes.
I knew it. We had to have a hot hole or a homicide hole. Yes.
We had to have holes in it.
Yeah, we had to have holes.
I like the holes. Mm-hmm. The holes have to stay.
Or does that just sound like our vaginas have knives?
I mean,
hey,
stay away.
That could be the cover art.
Like a bikini.
Okay.
A woman with wearing knives. A bikini and there's knives sticking out of the, like, you know how you get like hair sticking out of the edge of the bikini?
Yes, that's exactly what I was picturing. Yes, a bush. A knife bush.
I have not had a chance to research it, but I've actually heard about a device that they are using, from what I remember reading, in South Africa. Think of like almost like a diaphragm, but like a really angry one.
Holy shit.
And they're using it as like a protective device.
I've heard this before.
Women.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, so it's like, got sharp pieces.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes. It has teeth.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I have to look into this. I've not heard of this.
I am going to plan to look into this for sure. I haven't had a chance to. I just saw it the other day and I was like,
I think there are certain people that should always have that in place. Like if you're auditioning for anything in Hollywood.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. At the Abbey.
Possibly a good idea.
At the Abbey. I heard that's real bad.
You're on a private jet with millionaires.
Certain church spaces.
I was going to say.
I was just going to say anywhere on planet Earth as a woman.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you just have to have it in your purse, but in certain places you have it,
you know, kind of like
firmly in place.
Sometimes you have to, yeah.
Well, that's a different kind of purse.
Yeah, yes. That's where I keep my keys. I don't know about you guys. All right. So, no matter what our ship name is, it's definitely a rainy day in the haunted P&W today because we're together. Okay. So I know that the assignment that we had agreed on for our crossovers was Pacific Northwest Legends, but you guys did kind of go off on that because our episode about Fenn's Treasure was not, it was more Colorado and like, it wasn't really P&W. Was
yeah,
it?
Wyoming, Montana. I mean, yeah, it's adjacent. I claim them.
Yeah. P&W adjacent. I do too. Because they have Yellowstone, so they have to be included, which is what we were covering. Yes. But yeah,
exactly.
So you took creative liberties with the assignment, and I also, of course, took creative liberties with the assignment directions. Now, I recognize that San Francisco is not part of the Pacific Northwest. Somebody sent us a really terrible review.
Technicalities.
We don't even know that San Francisco is not part of the P&W.
It's my podcast.
Hey, we read somewhere that there was... There was a description that once included parts of Northern California, but it didn't say how far. Yeah. That's Northern California. So in some definitions, it is.
Yeah. Also, I always say we're podcasting from the P&W, so whatever we talk about, it counts. So shut the fuck up.
There you go. That's true.
If we talk about it, it's part of the Pacific Northwest. Japan now is officially part of the Pacific Northwest. It's on the Pacific. Yeah. All right.
Sister Cities is another good way to get around it.
And San Francisco isn't even part of Cascadia.
Aww.
But honestly, Washington and Oregon have way more in common with San Francisco than San Francisco has with Southern California, I think.
I think that probably makes sense.
Yeah. And frankly, we have way more in common here in Washington and Oregon with San Francisco than we do with, say, Idaho.
I agree.
Where you're basically required to join a militia or be really shitty about trans people using the bathroom.
I agree.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I agree.
I'm on board with the whole potato thing, but...
Cassie is not.
Wallace, Idaho. That's a place we should go take a trip. Wallace, Idaho is northern Idaho, but it's like this little tiny gym full of transplants that didn't go there for the militia. Ooh. And it's just artsy and fun. And
there you go.
Okay, well, we will disown all of Idaho except for Wallace.
And they're quirky. I mean, they made a thing in the middle of the road that in the middle of one of their intersections that said center of the universe.
Oh, that's right.
Go
back and listen to our episode about beautiful Wallace, Idaho.
Yeah, do it. Because they, in order to preserve their town and stop the government, they made all their entire towns and historic monuments.
I love that.
Oh, yeah. That was right. Because they wanted to tear down a bunch of the historic buildings to build the freeway. So they made the entire downtown.
Because I-90 used to stop there, and then you had to go through town, stop at the stoplight, go around a corner, a couple more corners, and then get back on a freeway. It didn't continue through at all. And so they wanted to make it go through by basically running through the town. And the town said, oh, hold on. We got to fight this. Give us a minute. And then they made every building a historical monument so they couldn't tear it down.
It was very smart.
Genius.
I love that.
Yeah. They have lots of lore there. They're crazy. Wallace, Idaho. Look it up. There's tons of haunts.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe some homicides.
So... I would like to officially offer San Francisco a partnership with Western Washington and Western Oregon and consider it an honorary member of both the P&W and Cascadia. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Are you in charge?
Like, yeah, I am. In fact,
I'm in.
I'm going to make it a proclamation.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
By the power vested in Shay.
Exactly. And the power vested in me that I've given myself. And this leads us into today's topic.
because this story isn't a legend technically, but it is about a legendary historical character. Someone who, like me, absolutely loved making proclamations. Today, we are talking about Joshua Abraham Norton, the Emperor of the United States.
Oh, boy.
So let's go back to our favorite time in history.
The 1880s.
90s? Nice. Hundreds.
1800s.
I like
that's
it.
True. I'll do that.
It feels very timely right now, though.
Uh-huh.
I know.
Yeah. Reincarnation?
This is an emperor that you would actually be, like, okay with.
You'd actually vote for this
sure.
one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get there. Yeah. So we are traveling back to the 1800s, a time of discovery, destiny, and questionable hygiene. San Francisco was exploding after the discovery of gold in Northern California in 1848. California wasn't even an actual state yet.
Hmm.
Almost overnight, sleepy port town became a mud-splattered carnival of ambition. Ships flooded the bay faster than they could be unloaded. So many that abandoned vessels were turned into warehouses, saloons, hotels, and occasionally mistakes. The streets rang with hammers and shovels, piano music spilling out of gambling halls, arguments in a dozen languages, and the constant hum of men convinced they were about to strike it rich. Gold-dazed men poured in from everywhere. Farm boys, sailors, dreamers, grifters, gamblers. Young, broke, and wildly optimistic. And where that kind of optimism gathers, so do the people hoping to separate it from its money. If you couldn't mine the gold, you could mine the miners. The city was loud, filthy, and chaotic. Fortunes were made and lost between breakfast and dinner. Laws were suggestions, justice was flexible, and reinvention wasn't just possible, it was expected. You could arrive in the morning and be someone entirely new by nightfall. In short, San Francisco was eccentric, ungovernable, and wildly theatrical. Exactly the kind of city where the idea of an emperor of the United States doesn't sound completely impossible. And into this beautifully unhinged mess walked Joshua Abraham Norton.
Sounds very wow. imperial. What a name.
Yeah.
Jan for short.
Hey, Jan.
Oh my God.
Emperor Jan.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Emperor Jan.
I love it.
Joshua Norton was born on February 4th in London to Jewish parents, maybe in 1815, maybe in 1820, or maybe 1818. Historians argue, records are fuzzy. But
there aren't any.
Well, they're kind of sort of.
He's probably born at home, and someone said later, yeah, I think he was born a couple years ago. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah, exactly. There were some things going on.
It's the 1800s of it all, you know?
Maybe since he was emperor, he just didn't want people to know his age. So he's like, it was totally 1820, you guys.
Very secret documents.
But most people have collectively agreed to just go with 1818. A few years later, Joshua's parents, John and Sarah Norton, packed up Joshua and his two brothers and set sail from London to South Africa as part of a British colonial effort happening at the time.
Oh, boo.
So right out of the gate, Joshua's life is marked by big moves, imperial ambition, and people thinking they can just pick up and start over somewhere else, which is grand.
Yeah, and colonialism. Yeah,
take what you want.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that. I'll have that.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, it's kind of like dogs peeing on things. Like, that's mine.
Called it.
I'm feeling a little bit, that's a little too close to home for me right
you
now.
You own nothing anymore? The puppy owns it all?
Why, has somebody been peeing on your stuff?
No, I don't.
What?
Yeah. No, honestly, I took my bath mat out of the dryer this morning. And the last thing that Charlotte did in like the hour before I hopped on to record with you guys was to unceremoniously pee on it yet again.
It's her pee pad. She's like, oh, this is nice to pee here. It's all soft.
There is a literal pee pad in the bathroom.
It's not as comfortable. This is fuzzy. Yeah. It smelled good because it just came out of the dryer.
Yeah.
She's bougie.
Yeah, it did smell good. Yeah, she is bougie.
You guys, I hate to tell you, my beautiful, adorable, angelic dog today, I took him for a walk and he was rooting around in the grass and he was eating cat shit.
No.
Roka's in the wild.
Oh. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Normally out of the cat box. This is.
Yep. So yuck. I have now been brushing his teeth and the cat's teeth every single night for the last week. So we'll see how that works. Okay, here we go.
With the same toothbrush?
Actually, yes. I just wash it in between.
They don't know.
They don't care. All right. By the age of 21, with help from his father, Joshua opened his own ship supplies business. He was ambitious, confident, and clearly trying to follow in his father's footsteps. Unfortunately, the business went bankrupt within 18 months. Huh. And then things got much worse. Joshua's father's business began to fail. Then his mother died. Then both of his brothers passed away. Finally, in 1848, his father John died as well.
Holy cow.
Within a relatively short span of time, Joshua lost his entire immediate family. So with nothing left for him in South Africa, Joshua took what remained of his inheritance, reportedly around $40,000, which, do you want to guess how much that is today?
It's a fuck ton of money.
Yes.
$40 million?
Oh, no, not quite. That's very ambitious. Nice job.
$400,000.
It is about $1.6 million today.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I would take it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty good start.
That'll get him home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would slum it with a casual 1.6.
Yeah, I'd take the $40,000.
That's a good future there.
Yeah,
that's true. $40,000.
Yeah, honestly.
True, Cassie. True.
And in 1849, he set sail for San Francisco and the promise of the gold rush. And this is where, for a moment, everything works out for Jan. I'm sorry, I'm just calling that for now.
I love
that. Easier than saying Joshua Norton. Norton got to work immediately. He established Joshua Norton and Company, a real estate and importing concern, and within just 3 years had transformed that $40,000 into $250,000, which is roughly $10.5 million today.
Get it.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So I've always said I'm not interested in using the Ouija board. I actually think I would like to talk to this fellow.
She
perhaps
may change
just
her
get
mind.
A little like investment advice.
Yeah. I need some tutorials.
Jan on the
yeah,
Ouija.
I don't know.
Tutorials.
I
mean, what do you think about crypto, Jan?
Like six.
Yeah.
He increased it by six times. More, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
next
time.
You want me to do maths?
Good yeah.
Gracious. Okay.
Well, it went from what? 40,000 to
250.
Yeah, 250.
Yeah, it's just over six times.
And how short a time again?
Three years.
3 years. That's insane. Yeah. For somebody who really has nothing except for as far as like business skills or, I mean, it seems pampered with his family, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, He started his first business at 21 with money from his father, and it was the same business basically his father was in. His father was in like a ship supplies company. So he started his own company, and it failed within 18 months. So, you know, he turned it around, was able to make a fortune.
Created all by his own.
Yeah.
And he...
Don't call it a comeback. Right.
Well, so it was a real estate and importing company. So he was buying up land around San Francisco. And this is at a time during the gold rush when people are pouring in. So the value of land is just going through the roof. He owned several tracts of land in San Francisco, including the extremely desirable North Beach area, which is, we know is pretty bougie at this point.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joshua Norton, or Jan, was prosperous. Yeah. He was respected. He circulated in the upper echelons of San Francisco society, and he lived the lavish lifestyle of the very rich. And then came 1852. That year, a devastating rice famine hit China, and a ban was imposed on rice exports out of the country.
The result, the price of rice skyrocketed by about 900%.
Holy sh!
Nobody could afford rice-a-roni.
The San Francisco treat.
Nice call, Joey.
Oh my gosh.
Norton.
I mean, how much of the American diet was really made up with rice at that point?
I'm curious about that too.
I have to wonder.
Yeah, I don't know. That is something to look into. I know, especially in San Francisco at this point, Asian immigrants were pouring in. Because of the gold rush.
I think that's the bigger issue is that, the population at that time, like part of like their native food culture, they're probably not able to access it.
Well,
anymore.
And part of the reason,
actually really
part
sad.
Of the reason that a lot of immigrants were coming from China was because of this famine. So,
I mean,
a lot of these people were poor farmers, a lot of them rice farmers, and there was a blight on the rice, and people were starving to death in China. So they were lured to the United States with this belief that they were going to come here and that gold literally grew on trees. Okay, so Norton, being a savvy and confident businessman, saw an opportunity. He attempted to corner the rice market. For roughly $25,000, which is about $1 million today, he purchased an entire shipload of Peruvian rice at 12.5 cents per pound, when the going rate in San Francisco was around 36 cents a pound.
Oh, damn.
It looked brilliant. It was not.
Uh-oh.
Because Norton wasn't the only one who had the same idea. Multiple ships carrying rice from Peru arrived in San Francisco all about the same time. And most of the rice higher quality than the rice that Norton had bought.
Oh, no.
So the rice market in San Francisco collapsed. Rice prices plunged to 3 cents a pound. Remember, he bought it for 12.5 cents a pound.
Oh, no.
So he tried to void his contract, claiming he had been misled about the quality of the rice. What followed was a lawsuit that dragged on for nearly 2 years, slowly bleeding him dry. And in 1854, the California Supreme Court ruled against him. This rice gamble had ruined him. He lost most of his fortune over this.
Dang.
Oh.
He tried to recover. In 1855, he ran for San Francisco tax collector, hoping that public office might help him claw his way back. It didn't. By 1856, at just 38 years old, Joshua Norton was forced to declare bankruptcy. He moved into a cheap boarding house on Kearney Street, and in one last attempt to remain visible, to stay relevant, respectable, just someone, he announced his candidacy for the U.S. Congress in 1858. When the election took place the following year, Joshua Norton's name wasn't even on the ballot.
Oh, no.
So between 1856 and 1859, Norton slipped almost entirely into obscurity. Many historians believe he was in a deep depressive state, and it's hard to argue with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
That makes sense.
Such highs and lows.
I mean, not getting on the ballot makes it pretty hard to win, and then that's kind of a bummer. It's a whole thing. It's a real snowball that we're seeing here.
You know, within 15 years, he had lost his entire family, built and lost a massive fortune, and fallen from the heights of San Francisco society to near invisibility.
Yeah, just stick a fork in him. He's done.
Highs and lows. So,
for about a year, he basically disappeared. Historians can't figure out what he was doing in that year. And then Joshua Norton, Jan, reemerged. And when he did it with a flourish, which we will get into after this quick break. Welcome back. I'm here with Caitlin and Jody. I'm here.
Oh, yeah.
Jody,
oh, yeah,
we are here.
We're here with Jody and Caitlin and Cassie. It's like when I talk to my brother on the phone and I'm like, yeah, I was talking to my mom. your mom?
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, your mom. Oh, yeah, our mom. Sorry. Caitlin and Cassie of the P&W Haunts and Homicides podcast. Okay, ladies, where did we leave off?
The emperor returned.
He's destitute.
Yeah. He disappeared. He had highs and lows, ups and downs, disappeared. And that's now right. He's back.
He's back. Joshua Abraham Norton was about to reemerge, reborn like a monarch butterfly. If that butterfly came back with opinions and a god complex. In July of 1859, Norton took out a paid advertisement in the San Francisco Daily Evening Bulletin. It wasn't subtle. It was a full-on manifesto addressed to the citizens of the Union. In it, Norton outlined what he saw as a national crisis and made it very clear that this crisis required immediate attention.
Of course.
And then, in September of that same year, he escalated.
As one does.
Surprise!
Joshua Norton personally hand-delivered a letter to the bulletin. Inside was a proclamation, the first of many. All right, Caitlin, you've got a pretty solid British accent.
Ooh.
I'm going to send you one.
Oh,
here, I'm
going
to send you something. You're on the spot to read. Okay.
Thinking British. There you go. Beans on toast.
Harry Potter. Shit.
At the peremptory request and desire of a large majority of the citizens of these United States, I, Joshua Norton, formerly of Algoa Bay, Cape of Good Hope, and now for the last 9 years and 10 months past of San Francisco, California, declare and proclaim myself Emperor of these United States.
Can we do a round of applause?
It's not over, though.
Oh, sorry.
It's not over. There's so much more. Okay, so she led with really talking up my British accent, but then she just said pompous, and that was the one.
Oh, that's fine.
You're doing great.
No, you're doing perfect. You're doing perfect. That's why I was like, thumbs up. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Excellent. Oh, do go on. And in virtue of the authority thereby in me vested, Jesus Christ, do hereby order and direct the representatives of the different states of the Union to assemble in Musical Hall of this city on the first day of February next. Then and there to make such alterations in the existing laws of the Union as may ameliorate the evils under which the country is laboring, and thereby cause confidence to exist both at home and abroad in our stability and integrity. I'm sorry, that's just really hard to say about the United States with us.
And it
straight
was
out
signed
of like Hunger Games or something.
The first emperor of the United States.
I vote Caitlin for emperor.
He signed
it emperor, huh?
Yes. The paper printed the letter in that evening's edition, largely for humorous effect. And with that single act of indulgence, something remarkable happened. Thus began Norton's 20-year reign over San Francisco and technically the United States. The San Francisco Daily Evening Bulletin took particular delight in him, faithfully publishing nearly all of his proclamations, often weekly, as Norton issued decrees with increasing confidence and frequency. And he wasted no time getting to work. The very next month, in October of 1859, Emperor Norton decided to abolish Congress.
Abolish Congress?
I think we all really need to understand that, unfortunately, this is what happens when, oh my God, I can't even think of the word anymore. You know, when we humor. Yes, that's the one. Oh boy. This is what happens when we humor mediocre, particularly white men, unfortunately. Yeah. Historically, you give them an inch and they take a mile.
Call it six.
Who are you calling mediocre?
Yeah, this is the Emperor of the United States, I'll have you know. Okay.
It's just a vibe.
Does anybody want to take on the next one, or do you want me to do it? I will. Let's see what I can do with this one. Okay.
His Imperial Majesty, Norton the First, has issued the following edict, which he desires the bulletin to spread before the world. Let her rip.
Yes, exactly. <what I'm>
Spread them cheeks.
Fart noises, fart noises.
Why do farts come up in every
it's
podcast?
It's me pumping my...
Funny.
Oh my God.
It is represented to us that the universal suffrage, as now existing through the Union, is abused. That fraud and corruption prevent a fair and proper expression of the public voice. That open violation of the laws are constantly occurring, caused by mobs, parties, factions, and undue influence of political sects. That the citizen has not that protection of person and property which he is entitled to by paying his pro rata of the expense of government. In consequence of which, we, the royal we, do hereby abolish Congress, and it is therefore abolished. And we order and desire the representatives of all parties interested to appear at the musical hall of this city on the 1st of February next, and then and there, to take the most effective steps to remedy the evil complained of.
Okay, so now I really do wish that we were doing video because I really would like everyone to see my face when I say, sir... This is a Wendy's.
Do we know where he was for a year? Because he ain't right no more.
He does not know where he was because I am quite confident whatever the appropriate hallucinogenic drug of the time was pastime during that period.
Was this when LSD?
Beatopia.
LSD getting, was that when they first accidentally found it? I don't know. Did he trip on some mushrooms? Did he find some mash?
Opium was rampant in that in San Francisco at that time.
Yes.
So, you know,
that would track.
Okay. Yeah. So the very next day after making the proclamation abolishing Congress, Norton followed up with another letter to the bulletin explaining that General Winfield Scott was not actually in the Pacific Northwest dealing with the San Juan Island dispute. See our episode on the Pig War of 1859.
Oh, yeah.
But had instead traveled west to escort the emperor to Washington City so that Congress could be properly disposed.
Of course.
General Scott unfortunately declined to come and escort the emperor to Washington.
End of excitement.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, surprising no one. Yeah.
Undeterred, Norton's next act was to abolish the Supreme Court, which would be nice. I wish we could abolish Congress and the Supreme Court right now. But
gosh, if only.
I'd bring Jan back right now. Vote Jan.
Yeah, right?
Right now, over what we have.
Vote Jan.
He's actually saying... sane in this time.
Exactly. He's got some great ideas. Then, in December, Norton was outraged by Virginia Governor Henry A. Wise, who had ordered the hanging of abolitionist John Brown on December 2nd. The emperor responded accordingly, proclaiming, "I do hereby discharge him, Henry A. Wise, from said office, and appoint John C. Breckinridge of Kentucky to said office of governor of our province of Virginia." So now he's deciding who's governor.
Somebody from Kentucky is now the governor of Virginia.
Yes. Okay.
Well, I mean, hey, here's the thing is when you're emperor, that is a thing you can do.
It's his responsibility.
I've heard. Yeah. Well, and an abolitionist... Correct me if I'm wrong, but those are the good guys.
So he was mad that John Brown, who was an abolitionist, had been hanged.
And as am I.
And here's the thing, is Emperor Norton was actually really progressive for his time. According to the Emperor Norton Trust, which is an organization that has been founded to kind of collect all of the history about Joshua Norton and keep it alive and honor him in the city. He was an adversary of corruption and fraud of all kinds, political, corporate, and personal. He was a persistent voice for the dignity, fair treatment,
and legal rights of immigrants and other marginalized groups.
Holy shit.
So he commanded.
What a novel idea.
I know. Especially in 1859.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
He commanded that courts allow Chinese people to testify because at that point, Chinese right. and Native Americans also were not allowed to testify in court. So if you yes. attacked and assaulted a person of that was Chinese or Native American, they could not actually testify against you in court of law.
It was a freebie.
Yeah. I don't think those were the only population.
No,
either.
No.
I think there were a number.
But
other,
in San yeah, Francisco, that was
horrific. Was right.
Timely. Yeah.
Yeah. That those would be the predominant right. groups impacted.
So he warned, the eyes of the emperor will be upon anyone who shall counsel any outrage or wrong on the Chinese. So he was an advocate of the Chinese.
Yeah, fuck around and find out.
Exactly. He demanded.
Love that for us.
He demanded that African Americans be allowed to ride public streetcars and be admitted to public schools. With respect to Native Americans, he proclaimed that all Indian agents and others involved in frauds against the Indian tribes should be publicly punished before as many, and I'm saying Indian because that's what he was saying, but
yes.
before as many Indian chiefs as could be assembled. He supported women's suffrage.
Woo!
I'm saying like
so early.
Start out thinking like this guy is crazy, which maybe he was, but he was also kind of awesome.
Yeah. Hey, listen, two exactly. things can be true.
He was a religious humanist and pluralist who favored church-state separation, warned against Puritanism and sectarianism, which I don't know what that word is. I wrote it, but I don't know what it is. refused to endorse any single church or synagogue and instead attended them all.
Oh.
He would just go from church to church.
Oh, that's cute.
So everybody mm-hmm. loved him. They're like, yeah, he hangs out with us like every Sunday and or and Friday.
I don't know.
Friday nights.
He's got busy weekends.
Sundays. Yeah. Yeah.
He also prohibited the enforcement of state Sunday laws, which discriminated against Germans and Jews. He defended the people's right to fair taxes and basic services, including well-maintained streets, streetcars, ferries, and trains. And he was an advocate for technological innovation when it served the public good. And Norton didn't stop at the U.S. borders. Concerned about the safety of the Mexican people, he declared himself protector of Mexico and ordered 10,000 troops to be deployed to Mexico City to stabilize the government.
Aww.
So
he's like this obnoxious, crazy man with all the right ideas,
yeah.
motives.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, the troops were not deployed.
Yeah. Well,
it's the thought that counts.
You win some, you lose
exactly.
some.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But eventually, the fraud and corruption plaguing his great nation became too much, even for an emperor. On his birthday, February 4th, 1860, Norton proclaimed that the United States itself should be dissolved.
Well,
declaring, we are certain that nothing will save the nation from utter ruin and falling to pieces except an absolute monarchy under the supervision and authority of an independent emperor and supreme council, assimilation to the Russian form of government with such alteration as may be adapted to the American nation.
I'm concerned.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden he went awry again.
Yeah, I may have follow-up questions when my brain stops ticking.
And when it became clear that no one was really listening, in July, he tried again.
Whereas it is necessary for our peace, prosperity, and happiness, as also to the national advancement of the people of the United States, that they should dissolve the Republican form of government, jazz hands claps, and establish in its stead an absolute monarchy, we, Norton the First, by the grace of God Emperor of the 33 states and the multitude of territories of the United States of America, do hereby dissolve the Republic of the United States, and it is hereby dissolved. and all laws made from and after this date, either by the National Congress or any state legislature, shall be null and of no effect. All governors and all other persons in authority shall maintain order by enforcing the heretofore existing laws and regulations until the necessary alterations can be effected. Given under our hand and seal at headquarters, San Francisco, this 26th day of July, 1860. That was actually insane.
That's what I was going to say. Like, just some rando gets up and just dissolves the United States.
Say it by borders.
And listen, you guys, he said dissolved twice. So, like, he was pretty serious.
Or he meant it. He definitely meant dissolved.
Yeah.
And this went on
year
after year. Now, all of this might sound like the ravings of a madman. Someone who desperately needed help. And
wait, are you going to say it's not?
That may well be true.
Oh, okay.
But instead of locking Emperor Norton away in an institution where the goal would have been to torture the madness out of him, San Francisco did something unusual. They embraced him. Norton ate for free at local restaurants, often paying with imperial notes that he made himself.
Shut the fuck up.
He declared...
I'm doing it right now. Where is my little tiny
yeah,
printer?
Like, get Canva okay. out.
Yeah. I'm on this,
or
guys.
He would declare that he was owed taxes by the establishment, and so they would pay in kind with food and services.
Oh, I love that.
He always had a seat at plays and public performances. They would literally save a seat for him. Residents made sure the emperor was fed, housed, and cared for.
Like, people bought into this.
He was like the pet of San Francisco.
I feel like they kind of probably felt bad for him. They're like, oh, you think you're emperor? That's so cute.
Yeah. They were taking care of the crazy guy.
Yeah.
They're there. Yeah. Head pat.
He was even given a regimental uniform. Hand-me-down pieces from both Union and Confederate soldiers. So his uniform was a mix of both.
Did they have a Salvation Army back
that
then?
That is...
I think so. I think it was...
A Goodwill.
He carried an ornate walking stick, sometimes an umbrella, and after his death, a small collection of walking sticks were found in his boarding house room. So he was really into these walking sticks. On formal occasions, he upgraded the look. Oversized gold epaulets, a sword... and a beaver hat topped with an ostrich plume.
Whoa.
Oh, fancy. My.
And in his lapel, he would always have a carnation donated by the local florist.
Oh.
And his proclamations weren't random. Norton read newspapers daily. He spent afternoons in the library reading, learning, and writing. He played chess with the locals. He attended public lectures and debates. He even sat in on sessions of the state legislature in Sacramento. And in between, he patrolled the city he loved, inspecting streets, sidewalks, and infrastructure, and calling attention to areas that needed improvement. Beneath the fantasy, his proclamations were often thoughtful, articulate, and elegantly written, commentary disguised as absurdity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly.
So, yes, ravings of a madman. But beneath it, there was substance.
But at least he was a well-spoken and clearly, educated and informed to some degree.
That's what I was wondering. His proclamations were definitely phrased and written with somebody who knew how to write official proclamations or had heard them enough to be able to write one. They were, they were written like he had the authority to declare these things. Which was the crazy part.
He grew up in England, which was a monarchy. Yeah. So, he was kind of familiar with that structure. Mm-hmm. So one of my personal proclamations of Emperor Norton's had to do with the name of his beloved city. Now, this might maybe or maybe not actually attributed to him, but we're just, for the sake of a good story, going to believe that it is. Yes.
We're going.
So yeah. Here's what it says.
Whoever, after due and proper warning, shall be heard to utter the abominable word Frisco, which has no linguistic or other warrant, shall be deemed guilty of a high misdemeanor and shall pay into the imperial treasury as penalty the sum of $25. So no Frisco.
Okay. Put it on my tab. I wonder how he would feel about vocal fry.
And Emperor Gordon may have even been partially responsible for the Bay Bridge. True story.
Oh, wow.
On January 8th, 1872, he proclaimed,
I hope it's a proclamation.
Whereas we observe that certain newspapers are agitating the project of bridging the bay, and whereas we are desirous of connecting the cities of San Francisco and Oakland by such means, now therefore we, Norton the First, De Gratia Emperor, do hereby prohibit the Ravenswood scheme being carried into effect, and order that the bridge be built from Oakland Point to Telegraph Hill via Goat Island. And lo and behold, in the early 1930s, so a little bit later, the construction of the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge began, right where the emperor suggested.
Hmm. Aww.
And ever since then, have been efforts, serious ones, to rename the bridge in his honor.
I'm not mad about it.
No, I'm here. The Emperor Norton Bridge, that sounds much better than the Bay Bridge.
Emperor Jan.
Emperor Jan.
The Jan Bridge.
Eventually, the city's tolerance was tested. In 1867, a police officer arrested Emperor Norton under a law allowing the detention of people deemed insane.
Oh, no.
The reaction from San Francisco was immediate and furious.
Yeah, I bet.
Newspapers mocked the arrest. Citizens protested. Merchants complained. Yeah. The public was not having it. So this is amazing. The chief of police not only ordered Norton released, but issued a formal public apology.
Shut up.
Stating that the emperor had harmed no one and was deserving of respect. So in response, Norton did what any reasonable monarch would do. He issued an imperial pardon.
Oh my God. He is an icon.
From that point on, police officers were known to salute Emperor Norton as he passed them in the street.
Aww. As they should.
And it wasn't just symbolic affection. Norton routinely used his public presence to diffuse real-world harm. During one anti-Chinese rally, when tensions were escalating towards violence, Norton walked directly into the crowd and began reciting the Lord's Prayer over and over, loudly, until the crowd grew quiet and eventually dispersed. It was one of several moments where Norton placed himself between vulnerable communities and public hostility, using spectacle, calm, and moral authority instead of force. And like we mentioned before, he even created his own imperial currency, beautifully printed notes signed by the emperor himself. And while they had no legal value, obviously, many businesses accepted them anyway, either as souvenirs or as a show of loyalty. Today, surviving notes are worth far more than their face value ever was.
Wow.
I was going to ask if there's some left.
Yeah, I think some businesses around San Francisco probably have some.
That's so cool.
I feel like going on a hunt.
I want one.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now next time we get to San Francisco, we got to look for signs of Emperor Norton. Norton also maintained a steady correspondence with world leaders. He wrote letters to Queen Victoria, at one point suggesting marriage.
Oh my. I mean, that's one way to become legit.
Exactly. Yeah, that he could have been emperor or king or whatever. Less a serious diplomatic proposal and more a reflection of how fully he inhabited his role. And to support himself, he sold photographs of himself, formal portraits that allowed citizens and tourists alike to take a little piece of the legend home with him. On January 8th, 1880, Emperor Norton collapsed on a street corner while on his way to a lecture at the California Academy of Sciences. He died before reaching the hospital. I'm kind of sad now.
Yeah.
I noticed.
I'm a softy.
I am a softy. Yeah. The city mourned. More than 10,000 people, some estimates go as high as 30,000 people, lined the streets for his funeral procession. It was one of the largest San Francisco had ever seen. For a man with no official power, it was a remarkable testament to how deeply he had been woven into the city's identity. And despite later rumors, Norton was not homeless. He lived in a modest boarding house on Commercial Street, supposedly subsidized by local benefactors. And despite persistent speculation that he had secretly retained his fortune, no hidden wealth was found. What remained were his uniforms, his hats, his walking sticks, a single gold coin, and a lifetime of carefully preserved dignity. Among those who watched Emperor Norton move through the city was a young journalist named Mark Twain. Don't know if you've ever heard of him.
Oh, shit. That guy?
Yep. Twain would later model aspects of the character of the self-declared king in The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn on Norton. A gentle, tragic ruler whose authority existed only because people chose to believe in it. And that may be Emperor Norton's greatest legacy. He was never a con man. He never demanded obedience. He didn't rule through fear or violence. His power came entirely from collective agreement, from a city that decided kindness, humor, and imagination were better responses to madness than cruelty. To this day, Emperor Norton remains a symbol of San Francisco at its best, eccentric, defiant, compassionate, and just a little bit theatrical. A reminder that sometimes the most radical thing a city can do is choose to care. And that's the story
of
Joshua Abraham Norton, the Emperor of the United States.
That is just a crazy story. I wish there was a video at that time or some way to document. There had to be something about him personally when you met him. Because, you know, when you were reading this, it's
like
just crazy.
Charisma,
it's just crazy.
Or,
it clearly is crazy, right? It's hard to see anything else. But people truly...
Like logically
yeah. Okay, but clearly people did see him that way.
Yeah. There's got to be photos, but like you can't really capture maybe all that he was in a photo. But
there's some good photos here. I'm going to send you a couple.
He totally reminds me of Santa Claus when you were talking about how like he existed because people believed in him. It's so Santa.
So Santa.
Yeah. So that's Emperor Norton.
Well, that was a great story, Shay. We were very, all of us are like so into it. We're looking him up. We're looking at pictures, trying to picture how he was as a person. There wasn't just a lot of respect for him. Like, you know, that quirky, crazy guy down the road that everybody takes care of. He's just a good guy, harmless, whatever. It was more than that. They respected him and believed in what he had to say.
Yeah.
And so much of it made sense. And then so much didn't.
Yeah, well, you know, when
everyone has good ideas with their bad ideas, or you know, the other way around.
Actually, it was more of his approach. If he hadn't declared himself emperor and made all these proclamations and ended the United States, like, you know, he was on to some things with human rights, and
he was on to something with with abolishing Congress.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, they're useless at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he really became kind of like a mascot of San Francisco. They really adopted him and loved him, and they still celebrate him even to this day.
Yeah, so, there's people that dress up as him.
I love that. That's so cute.
You know, I actually was aware of Emperor Norton, but I wasn't aware that he was a real person. So there's one of my favorite authors is Christopher Moore, and there's a book called Dirty Jobs, and it takes place in San Francisco. And Emperor Norton shows up as a character in there. They just call him the Emperor. And it was the same thing. He would go around and do proclamations and whatnot. And I just thought it was a fictional character in Christopher Moore's story. I had no idea it was based on this real character. Now, there's another little story within this story that I'm going to save for our next 5-Minute Friday about two dogs that were famous in San Francisco at this time. And they were rumored to hang around with Emperor Norton, called Bummer and Lazarus.
Were they in one of the pictures?
I actually see pictures there. Yeah.
Yeah. There. It's just a little story. Two dogs that were beloved in the city. And and they showed up in this book by Christopher Moore as well. They were the emperor's dogs in Christopher Moore's book. Now, if it was true, if they hung out with him, that's debated. But they were definitely dogs. So anyway, I love this story so much. It was very much a feel good story in the end.
Yeah, it was.
And it's strange to find people with his kind of morals and ethics in that time, even though he obviously was suffering from some mental illness,
or just any time. Yeah. Sometimes
he wasn't
also
following a movement. He was starting a movement.
Yes.
Or part of the beginning of a movement.
Yeah. Really though.
And there's a lot of debates about his mental health, right? Obviously he had some mental health issues. Though there was a whole essay written that I read about, you know, people will try to say that he had bipolar disorder or was schizophrenic, but this one essay thinks that no, probably not. He didn't present with any symptoms of hallucinations or paranoia. Yeah. He was very high functioning. The theory is he went into a deep depression after losing his fortune. And this was a way to cope with that. And he created a new
identity
for himself that could be respected and cared for without money, without having to have the wealth to travel in high society. He could get the respect of people without that. You know, whether or not he started out on a whim doing this and then was like, well, this kind of is fun. And then maybe in the end he believed it. Who knows? But, you know, he didn't harm anybody at all. In fact, it sounds like he actually helped people. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Hot take, not a doctor. But is it possible that he was just a very, like, I don't, almost like a method
theatrical
writer? Like, SNL and The Onion did not exist. He's like, you guys, I'm doing this ironically, of course. You know?
It reminds me of Jack
Black. Let's see where this takes me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and Emperor Norton, his proclamations, well, they were very theatrical, but he really did bring up the issues of the time in them. So, it was, like you said, kind of like, you know, like The Onion is satirical, but does speak to the issues of the time. And yeah, I think that you're onto something there, that it was kind of like that, like an SNL, like an Onion, just maybe not so, you know, in your face like it is today.
I don't think people were ready for it.
Right.
San Francisco was.
I'm here for it. Yeah. San Francisco was like, we fucking love this guy.
It's really heartwarming that the city treated him as kindly as they did. I mean,
I thought so too. Like, that is sweet.
Right.
Yeah. And that's
to this day.
Right. And that's progressive for the time too. Right. And especially like San Francisco was a rough
little San Fran, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're a little progressive in the human rights.
In
some ways.
And, you know, it was a rough place at the time. I mean, the gold rush brought in.
Yeah. The gold rush did.
And
that.
It was, there was, you know, it was kind of lawless for a while. They had to be like, oh, we need some laws.
Right. Oh, shit.
But, you know, it's amazing that they found that compassion. And maybe part of that was from it being a bit of a melting pot. While they didn't treat immigrants super great all the time, you know, it is nice to see that at least they treated him well in a time when people with mental illness were treated pretty horribly a lot of the time. I mean, literally torture mental illness out of
you. But at least we've learned from all of that, right? Because we would never treat people with mental illness or people that were immigrants horribly.
No, we don't do that anymore.
Like that. No. We wouldn't do that anymore.
Look at us manifesting.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like this country would bring back torturing children to torture the gay away from them.
Oh,
right?
No.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
That's back, people. Conversion therapy is back.
You know,
it's always worked.
I think.
Yeah, it works great. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate you being here with us to go on this rabbit hole.
Once again, so much fun.
It was.
Thank you.
It was so great to see you guys the other weekend. Thanks for hanging out tonight.
All right. Well, okay. Thanks again to the ladies from PNW Haunts and Homicides. Go out, find PNWHauntsandHomicides.com. You can find links there to where you can listen and more. Follow them, listen, and you'll get more great content from them. All right, guys. We love you. We will see you later. Mwah!
Mwah, mwah, mwah.
Stay spooky, bitches. Or is that your... That's... I'm stealing your thunder.
We say have a creepy ass day. Do you want us to say
there
it?
You go. Okay.
have a creepy ass day.
You've been listening to Rainy Day Rabbit Holes. We thought maybe you had forgotten. How could you forget? We are your hosts, Shay
and Jody.
And you can find all things on our website, rainydayrabbitholes.com, like sources, notes, pictures, links, whatnot. That beautiful website is designed and managed by the amazing and talented Letha Davis at easybreezy.com. That's easybreezy, EASYBRZY.com. All episodes are edited and produced by me, Shay, and you can reach out with any questions or comments at shay@rainydayrabbitholes.com. That's SHEA. Thanks for listening. Please share the podcast with your friends and family and stay curious.
See you down the rabbit hole.
It's no surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line, and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun, because you deserve the truth.